Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Ted Amun Aleph. The Mishnah says, "En choshishim shema girira chuda mibayit lebayit umimakom lemakom." We don't worry about the fact that a weasel might have taken the chametz from one house to another house, meaning a house that was not baduk still had chametz in it, to a house that was already baduk, umimakom lemakom, or from one location to another location. The imkain, because if you start worrying about that, then you have to worry about mechatzer lechatzer. You have to worry about it carrying it from one courtyard to another courtyard, as Rashi points out over here. Courtyard's not literally a courtyard, because we know that a courtyard actually doesn't require bedikah, because the orvim, the birds, come in and eat the chametz that's there, and therefore there's no need for bedikah. But chatzer is a reference to all the houses in a chatzer, and so therefore you don't have to worry about it going from one house in the chatzer to another house in a chatzer, or from one house in this chatzer to another house in another chatzer, umi'ir le'ir, or from a city to a city. If that's the case, en ledavar sof, there's no end to this problem. You could read that in one of two ways. You could say that the reason the chachamim didn't institute a necessity for bedikah, even though there is some sort of worry about the chulda, the weasel carrying these items from one place to the other, is because they couldn't deal with it in a global manner. If they were gozer, then they'd have to be gozer from house to house. And then if they were gozer from house to house, then you have to worry about chatzer to chatzer. Then you'd have to worry about more and more. And so even if they were gozer from house to house, it wouldn't help because of the larger scale problems that exist. And therefore, it's not worth being gozer or mitakein that you have to do a bedikah in this case, because you won't have any success in preventing the chametz from moving, because there are too many variables or too many probabilities of the chuda bringing it in. Or you could explain ein ledavar sof. If we do worry about such an item, then that worry will carry us from one item to another item to another item, and therefore in the davar sof, and therefore the chachamim didn't institute a takana, because we are not going to put a takana in place that is too burdensome to the public at large, and that's what would be result from this being choshesh, this worrying about such a situation, which is somewhere along the lines of what the solution would be in this situation, which is that we'd have to have everybody be bodek at the exact same moment. And that is not a plausible solution, to have everybody do their bedikah at the exact same moment. And even if you were successful at getting everyone to do it at the same moment, there's still the possibility that the weasels bring chametz from other parties' houses that are not Jewish. And therefore, it's an untenable solution. Tosafot asks over here, isn't this Mishnah just a derivative of what we already know from the previous Mishnah? The previous Mishnah told us that if you have a place that does not have chametz in it, then you don't have to worry about doing a bedikah in that location. And similarly over here, when you have a place that's already baduk, that already had chametz taken out of it, then we shouldn't have to worry about there being chametz in that location anymore. And then why would you be choshesh for gira chulda? What is this Mishnah adding that we don't already know from the first Mishnah? The Balei Tosafot suggests over here that if it were not for this Mishnah, we would be explained that the first Mishnah is a case where there are no chuldot. It's a case where there are no weasels around that carry the chametz from one location to another location, and that's why over there we don't worry about it. But in a case where you do have chuldot, maybe we would worry about it carrying the chametz from one location to another location. So that's why Tosafot says that's the chiddush of this Mishnah, is that even when you have the presence of a chulda, we don't worry about the fact that these animals are going to carry the chametz from one location to another location. The Tosafot Rosh has a slightly nuanced approach to what we say in the Tosafot over here, which is that it makes a difference as to why there's not chametz in the location. In the first Mishnah, there's no chametz in location because that's a location that never has chametz in it. Since it never has chametz in it, the weasels, the chuldot, don't hang out over there because there's no items for them to eat. There's no food for them to eat. And therefore, that's why over there we wouldn't worry about chuldot bringing in chametz to that location or being available to bring chametz into that location. On the other hand, here, when we're speaking about a case where you're talking about one house that was baduk, now is checked, or a room that was baduk, and a room that's not baduk, there, the room all year round has chametz in it. It's just now in the last little time period that you've eliminated the chametz from the location. But that doesn't mean that the chuldot don't hang out in those locations, or not going to bring chametz into those locations, because there normally is chametz. There's normally food available to them, and therefore their presence in these locations makes sense, given the background, or given the fact that normally there is chametz in these locations. And that's why it's differentiated from the first Mishnah, where we don't have any chametz, or it's a location with no chametz, versus here,
or it's a location that does have chametz, but at the current moment doesn't have chametz. The Rambam actually integrates the two Mishnayot and says that this Mishnah is an example of a case where it's a makom she'ein bo chametz. Meaning that the first Mishnah that said that when you have a location that doesn't have chametz that's brought into it, you don't have to do bedikah, that is because ein choshishin, because we don't worry about she'megira chulda mi bayit lebayit, mi makom lemakom. That's the reason why we'd allow you not to do bedikah in those particular locations. Now the Gemara says, Taima de lo chazina de shakal. Our Mishnah has an assumption that we did not see the chulda, we did not see the weasel carry the chametz into the location, and that's why we don't worry about it. Ha chazina de shakal, had we had seen the weasel carry the chametz into that location, chashinan, we would worry about it. Ubay bedika, and then we would require bedika in that case. Ve'amai. Gemara wants to know, why would you need to worry about that? Neima chaltia. Why don't we just say that the weasel, whichever animal brought the chametz to that location, also consumed the chametz? Milotnan, don't we have a Mishnah in Ohalot? Medurot ha'akum. If you have living spaces of non-Jews, tmeim, we assume that they have a problem of tumat hamet. Kama yesheher b'madur. How long does the person have to occupy the location in order for us to worry about the fact that there is tumah here? Hey, I'm a dur, tzarich bdika. And then you have to check the location to make sure that there is no tumat hamet there. 40 yom, 40 days, which is the time period for yitzirat havlad, the amount of time it takes to have conception and then have an entity that is considered tamei if it was miscarried. Afa pishein loisha, even if the individual doesn't have a wife. Now here's the most important statement of the Mishnah, which is v'chol makom she'achuda v'chazir yicholim le'aloch, any location where you could have a weasel or a pig go in or spend time there, ein tzarich b'dika, does not require any checking. So what is being discussed over here is tumat hamet. As Rashi points out over here, there's a machloki between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon with regards to tumat hamet of a non-Jew. Rabbi Shimon believes that tumat hamet of a non-Jew only applies to maga and masa, means to come into direct contact with the mate, or carrying the mate, or heset, or causing movement of the mate, but it does not have tumat ohel, whereas the Chachamim believe that even a non-Jew has tumat ohel. So according to the Chachamim, this whole scenario makes sense, and Tosafot and other places suggest that this Mishnah is only according to the Chachamim, who believe that there is tumat ohel for a non-Jew, and that's why we worry about a possibility of some sort of mate being buried in the location, and therefore causing tumah, if you come to reside in this location, you come to take over this location. Whereas for Rabbi Shimon, it's much harder to understand. Rashi over here seems to be hinting at the fact that there is tumat maga umasa, and so even for Rabbi Shimon, there is a chashash of tumat. It may not be tumat ohel, it might just be tumat maga umasa. Others like the Rambam seems to suggest that the problem over here is akin to the problem of tumat ha'amim, or tumat chutz la'aretz, which is that the Chachamim assign Tuma to Chutz La'aretz because of the problem of Meitim in Chutz La'aretz. When they were Gozer, there they were Gozer not only on Tumat Magav Masa, but also Tumat Avir or Tumat Ohel. And similarly over here, we would suggest the same thing. Once the Chachamim instituted a Gzerah that we worry about Tuma in these locations, then that Tuma is not only of Magav Masa, but also for Tumat Ohel. And therefore, even Rabbi Shimon would agree that there is Tumat Ohel in this case. Or there's a possibility that when a person is directly above a mate, tumat ohel can be manifest in different ways. It could be that they're in the same house, and that's tumat ohel. Or tumat ohel could be in an instance when the individual himself is above the mate, and that creates tumat ohel. So what we do know that in other occasions, the Gemara suggests that when a person is directly above the mate and is a tumat ohel from that way, it's akin to tumat maga. And so therefore, the Rashash suggests over here that even Rabbi Shimon would agree that when you're mahil mamash on the mate, that the mate is considered to be as if you're touching it, it's tumat maga, and because of that, even Rabbi Shimon would agree that there is tumah here even for a non-Jew, even though it's tumat ohel. So no matter which one of those solutions you use, the Mishnah here suggests that we have a problem when the location is occupied by a non-Jew. The problem is that we're chushesh, that when the wife of this individual, and the Mishnah goes on to say that even if he doesn't have a wife, because we're chushesh liznut, that he brings in women into this location, that these women will miscarry, and that miscarriage they bury in the house. They don't take it out and bury it somewhere else. They're not worried about Tumah and Tahara, so they don't rid themselves of these miscarriages. They just bury them on location. If they bury them on location, there's a possibility that these entities already reached point of development, which means 40 days, whereby that they would create tum'ah if they were miscarried. And so now this miscarriage that happens and is buried in the house, if a Jew wants to move into the house and wants to be sure that it's going to be tahor, they're going to have to do a bdika, they're going to have to check, they're going to have to dig up the floor, basically, and ensure that none of their nefelim, none of their miscarriages were buried in this location. So that requirement to do a bdika is only true when there aren't animals around. There aren't weasels and pigs that are around, because the weasels and the pigs will ferret out such a nefel, and they'll end up eating it and ridding the area of that problem. So the Gemara's question now is, if in that situation we're willing to rely on the fact that these animals come and eat whatever is there, and therefore you don't have to worry about tumah, and that safek, or that possibility that these animals will come and eliminate it, take away the chashash that the goy buried something or a nefel in there that creates tumah, why can't we say the same thing with regards to chametz? Even though we saw the chametz being carried into the location, let us assume that those animals that carried it into the location also consume the chametz, similar to the way that they consume the nefel that's there, and we don't worry about it anymore. So let's apply that principle to chametz as well. So Amar Rabbi Zera suggests that that's not the case, because lokasha, habu basar, habu lechem, depends on what you're speaking about. When you're speaking about flesh, when you're speaking about basar, that's a rarity, that's a real find for these animals, and they don't leave any of that over. They consume that completely, and therefore you don't have to worry about the tumah. Habu lechem, but when you're speaking about lechem, it's different, because b'basar lo mishayra, because by flesh or meat, they don't leave anything over. B'lechem, by bread, which is a more common find for them, or a common food for them, then mishayra, they tend to leave over. Now, leave over doesn't mean that they just drop crumbs, it means that they even store it for the future, because they will eat it in the future, and they're not worried about consuming it right away, or losing it, because it's not as big a delicacy or big a find, because they find this type of food all the time. So that would differentiate between lechem and basar, to say that the case of ohel, we can trust the animals to do their job, and therefore they won't be there anymore. Whereas by the case of lechem, we can't trust the animals, because they tend to leave over, and they don't always consume it completely. The Rabbeinu Tam qualifies this idea of basar and says it's unique to nefelim, it's unique to miscarriages, because there the basar is very soft and very edible for them, and that's where we say that they don't leave anything over. If it's a regular piece of meat, that wouldn't necessarily be the case. This is very unique because of the fact that it is a nefel, and it's something that's easily consumed by them, and quote-unquote a delicacy, and therefore they would complete it or wipe it out entirely, and that's why we can trust them in this case. The Rabbeinu David over here discusses the whole premise of the question of the Gemara, which is that if there really is a safek as to whether the animal ate the chametz or didn't eat the chametz, this is a din derabanan, because we're speaking about the necessity for bedikat chametz in this case, and that requirement of bedikat chametz is a din derabanan, because bebitul ba'al masagi, it's enough to do bitul to eliminate the problems deoraita, and therefore you have now a safek derabanan. And a safek derabanan would be the kula. So that can't be the tenor of the question over here, because the answer would be obvious. You wouldn't need to bring in the Mishnah from Olot to try to prove anything. You could have proved everything, or you could have asked this question and solved the problem within the world of chametz itself and said, well, it's a safek derabanan lekula. We have a safek if the animals ate it, and it's a din derabanan. We'll say safek derabanan lekula. Ella, what you have to suggest over here is that the questioner is suggesting that the case here is that it's a vadai. The fact that we saw the chametz being entered into this location by the animal means that we know for certain that there is chametz over here. And even in a din derabanan, we don't say it's a fake motzimi de vadai. And we have an uncertainty that can eliminate the vadai, that can eliminate something that is absolutely certain. And that's why over here the Gemara is asking, well, we know for certain the chametz is there. How can it be that the safek of the animal will eliminate that problem? And the answer is that you can't have it be eliminated, because the Mishnah only says in a case where you didn't see it. But if you did see it and it's vadai, you can't eliminate it. To that, the Gemara brings the Mishnah in Olot, which shows us that even in cases de oraita, where you have a case of tumah, we still say that a safek of the animal can come along and eliminate the vadai. But what that shows you is that what the animal is doing is not a safek anymore, but rather a chazoka, that has a strong determination that animals will complete whatever they're going to eat in these situations. And since it is a chazoka, that chazaka has the ability to undermine a vadai. And just like the Mishnah Olot, the assumption is that for certain, a goy who lives there is going to bury nefelim, bury miscarriages in the location. Nevertheless, we say that the animals come along and they can undermine that vadai. Let us say over here, by the case of chametz, that the eating of the animals is a sufficient chazaka in order to eliminate the vadai that we saw that the chametz was being brought in there. And the answer to that question is that there's a difference between lechem and basar. Basar, you can have such a chazaka that can undermine the vadai, whereas by a case of lechem, we don't have that chazaka because there's a tendency of the animal to leave over when it comes to lechem. And the Rabbeinu Danabi continues with that thought, the remainder of the Gemara, but just presenting that to understand in a broader sense that there are issues which will be raised throughout this daf today with regards to whether if there's a safek derabanan, why in all these instances don't we just go to kula? And he is explaining because here we have a vadai chametz there, and that's not a safek, then is no longer a viable way to eliminate the vadai chametz being there. Amar Rava. Rava challenges that answer Rabbi Zeira and says, "I might. How can you say that? Bishlama hotam. Over there you can say imur dehava, imur delohava." Rava takes a different approach and says that it's not a problem of vadai anymore by the case of a halot. Over there it's a possibility there was a miscarriage. There's a possibility there wasn't a miscarriage. Im tim salomer hava. Now, if there was a miscarriage and it was buried there, imar achalte. Let us suggest now that maybe it ate it up. Ava hacha, in our instance, it's the vadai de chazina de shaka. We know for certain the animal carried the chametz in. Miyemar da achalte. Then will you then invoke this idea that the animal ate it? So what he's suggesting is that your assumption that the case of olot is a case that there's vadai, a miscarriage that's buried there, is just not true. Over there, there's a presumption that that would happen if the goy lived there. But it's exactly that, an assumption. And that assumption makes it that there's a safek. There's a possibility it was buried there, possibility it wasn't buried there. And even if it was buried there, there's a possibility that the animal ate it. That type of chazak or that type of safek is able to eliminate a safek as to whether the miscarriage is buried in the house or not. Our instance is totally different. Here we have a vadai chametz in the location, and you have a safek that is being generated by the fact that the animal possibly ate it. And what Rava says, or establishes the principle is, have a safek vivadai, you have something that's in doubt, something that is certain, ein safek motzi midei vadai. And such an uncertainty cannot come to eliminate something that is vadai, something that is absolutely certain. Tosafot here raises an issue that with regards to tumah, we have a principle that safek tumah b'shut yachid is tameh, and safek tumah b'shut rabim is tahor. In this instance, when we're speaking about the house of the Ovdei Kochavim, we're speaking on an instance where it's a reshut yachid, and now we have a safek tumah. Even according to Rava's formulation, that we're not certain that there is a miscarriage that's buried in the house, nevertheless, it's a safek. And that safek already should make it that it's a safek tumah b'shut yachid, and safek tumah b'shut yachid should be tameh. So why don't we assume that it's problematic here, even though it's only a case of safek? So what the Balei Tosafot suggests over here is that either the nature of this safek is different than other safekot. By other safekot, we have information, and we're trying to determine if it is tameh or if it is tahor. But we have a sense that something took place or something happened already, and now we're trying to determine if there was some factor that mitigated that. That's not true in our instance over here. The case of the safek with regards to whether there's a miscarriage that's buried in his house or not is what's called a safek biyah. Safek whether the person ever entered the location. It's a safek as to whether the problem ever arose. In that situation, we don't say safek tumah b'shut yachid is tameh because there we're not even certain that there is something to worry about. If there's already something to worry about and we have a safek, then we say safek tumah b'shut yachid is tameh. But in a case where we don't even know if the tumah existed over there or the person ever entered the location, then we do not say that it's safek tumah b'shut yachid. So that's one way that Tosafot deals with it. Inami, or he brings what we just mentioned from the Rabbeinu David, which is imar achalte adif mishar safekot, that the fact that the animal ate it might be a better safek than normal sfeikot, the sfeik haragil hu. So it's a very common occurrence, bekarov levadai, and it's almost certain that it has happened. Tosfot will invoke this again on the Amud Bet, which is that there are differences in sfeikot. Certain sfeikot are 50-50. There are other sfeikot which are 90-10. And what he's suggesting over here is that the sfeik that the animal ate it is not a 50-50 sfeik. It's something along the lines of 90-10, and therefore it's almost certain that the animal ate it. And that type of sfeik is more powerful, karov the vadai, and that can even eliminate the normal principle of sfeik tumar b'shute yachid is tamei, and we would say it's tahor in this instance. So Tosafot attacks both sides of the problem, either saying that the nature of the sfeik over here is different, and that's why it doesn't have the applicability of sfeik tumar b'shute yachid, because the original sfeik is not a normal type of sfeik, because we don't even know if there's tumah here, or he attacks from the sfeik that comes to undermine the fact that the animals are going to eat it is a stronger sfeik than a normal sfeik, and therefore it eliminates the principle of sfeik tumar b'shute yachid is going to be tamei in this instance. Now the Gemara challenges, is it really true that ein sfeik motzi midei vadai? Is that really true? V'hatanya. We have other examples. We have braitot over here that we're going to bring that seem to indicate that you can have a sfeik, an uncertainty, that undermines a certainty. Etanya, chaver shemet. Someone who's a chaver. Chaver is someone who's makpid, to be mafrish, trumot, and masrot all the time, to keep his items bit tahara. It was a status in their day that was granted to individuals who were careful about tumah and tahara, and were careful about trumot and masrot. It was quote-unquote like a club of sorts, where you could trust those individuals if you were buying from them, if you were interacting with them, to know that they were makpid on these halachot. So this individual, v'niach migura mleya perot, and he left over a, he leaves either a storehouse or a silo full of fruit. V'hilu hein bnei yoman. And here we could see that they were picked today. They were just freshly brought into the silo at this point in time. Harechen b'cheskat metukanim. We assume that already the trumot and masrot were removed from these items. Now with regards to trumot and masrot, most items are not chayav in trumot masrot until they reach what's called the point of gemar melacha, meaning that there's a certain amount of processing that takes place with regards to items that are taken from the field. For instance, for grains, it is that they have to be threshed, winnowed, piled up, and the final stage of that is what's called miruach hakri, which is the flattening out of the pile, is the placing of the grains into a certain structure and flattening out that pile. That's what's called the gemar melacha. Once you reach that threshold, they become chayav in trumot and masrot. So the assumption over here is that he left something that's bnei yoman, that Rashi says, shenikarim. It's clear that the miruach hakri was done today. And so since it was done today and he passed away today, how can you assume that he took off trumot and masrot? And the Gemara poses the question, v'ha-ha-ha, v'adai tvilei hanei peirei. These peirot are clearly chayav in trumot and masrot. They are tevel, because we know that the threshold that would make them chayav in trumot and masrot was crossed, and therefore they're v'adai tevel, the safek musarim. And yet we have a safek as to whether trumot and masrot were taken off, a safek lo musarim, or whether they were not taken off. Bika'ati, and that's a fake as to whether the trumot and masrot were removed, come along, umatsimi de vadai, and then they take away the problem of tevel, meaning that the orshim, the inheritors of this individual, can go ahead and eat these grains, or eat these fruits and vegetables without any problem, without any chashash that they are tevel, even though we know for sure they did reach the point of tevel, yet we're not certain as to whether they had trumot and masrot taken off of them. It's a fake. Did the chaver do it or did he not do it? So Gemara gives one of two answers. Hatam vadai vivadai hu. One possibility is that it is a certainty and a certainty. I mean, there is certainty that they are tevel, but there's also certainty that the trumot and masrot were removed because the vadai masrei. It's for sure the masrot were taken off of this item. Kedir Rabbi Chanina Choza. Because of the memra of Rabbi Chanina Choza, Dam Rabbi Chanina Choza, Chazaka al Chaver. A Chaver has an established track record, or we believe that he always will. He will never leave around anything. He will never put people in a position whereby they could have a michshol of trumot and masrot. And therefore, he would uncertainly, crossing over the threshold where it made it into tevel, he would have taken off trumot and masrot immediately, because he wouldn't leave it in that state even for a single moment. Meaning that since a chaver is so makpid on this item, it is something that we have certainty that he would not, because of his status of a chaver, let this remain in a state of tevel, and therefore we can assume for certainty that he removed the Trumot HaMasrot. So just like there's certainty that it was tevel, there's also certainty that he removed the Trumot as Masrot from this. V'yibaitema, and some suggest that safek v'safeku. The truth is that it's not necessarily vadai tevel, it could be a safek that it is tevel, and a safek that whether he took off the Trumot HaMasrot. Because dilma mi'ikora, imer de lo tvile. It's a possibility that they never reached the point where they would be tevel, or crossed the threshold by which Gemar Malocha would have been taken place, and then they would be Chayav in Shemot Masrot, because we have this principle of Rabbi Shaya, Dam Rabbi Shaya, Ma'arim Adam al Tvuato. Person can be a little bit sly, tricky about his grains, Umachnisa b'mot shela, and bring it in while it's still in its husks, Zeshei Behema Ochelet, so that his animal can eat it, Ubtura Min HaMaser, and then it would be Pator from Min HaMaser. So what this is speaking about, as Rashi notes over here, is that in order to be chayav in Trumot HaMasrot, even though we said before that the threshold to make you chayav in Trumot HaMasrot is the Gemar Malocha, that's only true when the purpose or what you're going to do with these items is sell them or utilize them in that current state. But if a person is going to utilize them for their own benefit and for their own purposes, then there's another stage that is required in order to be chayav in Trumot Masot, and that's called Riat Pnei Abayit. It means that you have to see the front of the house. Now, Riat Pnei Abayit means a requirement that the items are brought in through the front door of the house, literally. And so that the item, after it's reached the point of Gemar Melacha, which is that after it already has been shelled, it has been threshed, winnowed, and all the other processes, and reached the point of Gemar Malacha of Miruach HaKri. At that point, once it's brought into the house, Riat Pnei Abayit, that's the final stage that makes it Chayav in Trumot and Ma'asrot. If you were going to use it for seeds, or you were going to sell it, then that already would have taken place at the point of Gemar Malacha. But when you're going to use it for your own purposes, process it further, make it into flour, and utilize it for yourself, in that case, you need another stage to be chayav in Trumot Masot, and that's Riat Pnei Abayit. What Rav Shaya points out is that you can avoid that problem of Riat Pnei Abayit by bringing in the items not in their finished state, but rather in an unfinished state. If you bring them in with their husks into the house, and then you only afterwards do the Gemar Melocha in the house, they will never be chayav in Trumot and Masrot. They will never reach the point of Tevel. So if there was Gemar Melocha and Riat Pnei Abayit, then there is din of tevel for them. On the other hand, in a situation whereby they were brought into the house, and they were brought in while they were not finished in their processing, and then the processing was finished in the house, that will never make them chayav in Trumot Masrot, at least midoraita, at least min haTorah, the individual will not be chayav in Trumot Masrot. And for that reason, there is only a safek here of tevel. It's a possibility that he did the Gemar Malacha before he brought it into the house. Never the Riat Pnei Abayit triggers a chiyuv trumot and masrot midoraita, and that would be tebel vadai. There's also another possibility that he brought into the house while it was still in its shell, and by doing such, he is not chayav in trumot and masrot, and even if he does the processing inside of the house, that does not trigger the necessity for trumot and masrot, at least midoraita, because that gemar melacha is already post riat pnei abayit, and you can't reverse that which you've done already. The way the Ramban phrases it in other places is that there's only one Riat Pnei Abayit, there's no two Riat Pnei Abayit. So even if you were to take it out of the house again and bring it in again, it wouldn't change the status of the item. Once it's gone into the house once, that's already the Riat Pnei Abayit is done. And if it wasn't in this of a finished state at that point in time, you're not chayav in Trumot or Masrot, at least midoraita. So Rashi already points out a difficulty with this Gemara, which is the fact that even if you bring it in b'mot shela, even if you bring it in its husk, and then you do the processing inside of the house, the ability to utilize this item is only a bit achilat arai, is only in a temporary type of eating, not a permanent type of eating. So that's why the Gemara says over here that according to Rabbi Shaya, he's bringing it in shetei behemto ochelet, that his animal can eat it. His animal is allowed to eat because animals eating or animal feed is never achilat keva. It's not a permanent meal or a fixed type of meal, and therefore it does not have a problem or is not an issue in terms of eating from these grains. Because there is a din d'rabbanan, even before you reach the point of Gemar Melacha, or even before the point of Riat Pnei Abayit, that one may not partake of the items that you have in a manner of echilat keva. An individual, a human being, can eat from these items, echilat arai, until the point of gemar melacha. Once you cross over the point of gemar melacha, you can't even have an echilat arai. So that means that you can use it for animal feed even before that point in time, and human beings can eat it for achilat arai before that point of the gemar melacha or the riyat pnei abayit. Over here, where you're bringing it in the husk into the house and then only processing it afterwards, it's the equivalent of never reaching the point of gemar melacha. And therefore, should have those rules that apply midrabanan. And those rules that apply midrabanan are, number one, animals can eat from it, which is what the Gemara suggests over here, is why you bring it in order to feed it to the animals. Human beings can eat it from it, achilat arai, but they can't eat from it, achilat keva. So if that's the case, then there is tevel midrabanan over here. There's still tevel midrabanan. So even though, yes, you rid yourself of the problem of tevel midoraita, you still have a problem of tevel midrabanan. And then you're back to square one, which is that you have vadai tevel midrabanan, and you have safek, whether he took off Trumot and Masrot. Why is that able to eliminate the problem, midrabanan? So that's what Rashi says over here. Begabe isur derabanan, samchina lecheskat chaver sheisran. Rashi says, even in this second answer, we're still relying on this idea from the first answer, that a chaver, in general, we can rely on the fact that he took off his Trumot and Masrot. We won't rely on it if you're talking about vadai tevel midoraita, but by vadai tevel derabanan, we would invoke that principle. And therefore, the fact that a chaver can be trusted to take off his trumot and masrot is enough for the yorshim, the inheritors over here, to say, yes, it might have been tevel midrabanan, vadai, but nevertheless, we can rely on my father to have taken off the trumot and masrot because he was a chaver. That's how Rashi solves the problem. Others simply say that you've now moved it from a safek de oraita to a safek de rabanan. Before, you had tevel that was de oraita problem, and now you have a safek whether he took off Trumot and Masrot. So you can't have a safek in a doraita eliminate the problem doraita. On the other hand, we're dealing with tevel midrabanan. Now you're dealing with, even if it's vadai tevel midrabanan, nevertheless, you have a safek, because maybe the person took off Trumot and Masrot and didn't. That's a safek derabanan. But safek derabanan, we're going to go lukula. So that's the way other Mishonim deal with this issue. The answer of Rashi, on the other hand, actually helps out with a different question that's asked by the Tosfot Reed, which is, why don't we say this not just by a chaver, we could say this by an amaretz too as well. Because we have a principle, rov amaretz masrinein. Most amaretz do take off trumot and masrot. It's a rov, not a super majority, but definitely a majority. If that's the case, that we have a safek as to whether it's tevel, and we have a safek as to whether they took off trumot and masrot, over here you would have the same outcome for an amaretz as you have for a chaver. Why should it matter that the person who passed away was a chaver, whether he was, or he was an amaretz? According to Rashi, the reason that we can eliminate the tevel midrabanan is because we're dealing with the chazoka of the chaver. So that additional chazoka of the chaver is what makes it that we are allowed to, or that we do, eliminate or not worry about the Isur Tevel Midrabanan that exists in this case. Even in this situation where you did it by bringing it into the house in its husks, you still have Tevel Midrabanan, Badai. That nevertheless is eliminated by the Cheskat HaChaver. The Amaretz doesn't have that Chazaka, and since he is Chashud, not to take off Trumot Masrot, he cannot overcome that problem of Tevel Derabanan, and that's why this is uniquely associated with a Chaver. For the other Rishonim that simply say that it's a Safek Derabanan Lekula, what you have to say is that the Amaretz would not go through this trouble in order to bring it in its shell and then do the Gemar Melacha in the house, which is a pretty big undertaking to process it in the house instead of outside. And that undertaking, a person who was worried about Trumot Masrot would do, but someone who isn't so worried about Trumot Masrot wouldn't bother to do it like Rabbi Hoshaya. So the chashash that you would act like Rabbi Hoshaya is only for individuals who are worried about Trumot and Masrot, and therefore, this is only true by a chaver who's worried about these issues, not true by an amaretz. Even though Rov Amaretz take off Trumot and Masrot, they're not so worried about it that they're going to go through the trouble of doing it like Rabbi Hoshaya, and therefore, for the amaretz, you do not have this safek tevel, you have a vadai tevel midoraita, and therefore it's no longer a safek derabanan, but a safek doraita, and that's why we're machmir by a amaretz and mekil by a chaver. The question that one has to ask over here is, if this individual really is a chaver, then why is he going and acting like Rabbi Hoshaya? If this person's a chaver and he's going to take off Trumot and Masrot, why doesn't he then just simply take off the Trumot and Masrot instead of going through all the trouble to bring it into the house in a manner that actually will make him patur from Trumot Masrot. It seems to be inconsistent with the personality or the persona that we're trying to say is involved here, which is a chaver. Why would a chaver be ma'arim? Why would he be involved in trickery or involved in a sly manner in order to eliminate his necessity to take off Trumot and Masrot? So there are those that want to suggest there's a Maram Chalawa here, and then there's a Chazon Ish also mentioned over here, that the person's intent in the end is to take off Trumot and Masrot, because the Haroma is only successful at taking away the problem of Achilat Arai, but not taking away the problem of Achilat Keba. And therefore, the person's intent in the future is to take off Trumot and Masrot. So he's not really trying to eliminate it. He's just temporarily doing that. Why he would do that temporarily is either because he wants to feed it to his animal, which is totally fine. And so therefore, he doesn't want to bring himself to a Chiyuv Trumot and Masrot yet just to feed his animals. So therefore, he does it in a manner where his animals can eat, and he still won't be Chayav in Trumot and Masrot. Or the Tosafot Arid over here suggests that the person's trying to stall in having a Chiyuv Trumot Masrot because he doesn't want his family members to, by accident, use these items and then be Chayav for eating Tevel because he has yet to eliminate or take off the Trumot Masrot. So he brings it into the house in a manner that will not make it Chayav in Trumot Masrot. That gives him time, or buys him the time that he needs in order to take off the Trumot Masrot, but not put his family at risk for lifnei iver lo titei michshol, of possibly eating tevel in the interim, since it will not make it chayav in tevel midoraita. So it's a temporary solution, not a permanent solution. That brings us to the Balei HaTosafot over here, which discuss a number of items, one of which is, from this gemara you see that there is a restriction against getting hana from tevel, because the gemara suggests over here that it's only because there wasn't riyat pnei abayit that you're allowed to have your animal eat from these items. But had there been riyat pnei abayit, and now it was tevel vaday, and you're chayav in Trumot Masrot, your animal would not be able to eat from it. And so you see from here that there is a din of isur hana'ah from tevel, and the Tosafot goes on to show that there is such a concept of Isur Hana'ah from Tevel, and he shows that it has to do with something that's called Hanat Kilui, that when you get a benefit that eliminates or destroys the item, that is impermissible with regards to Tevel, as well as by Trumat Me'ah, and that is a restriction from Yisrael, or Yisrael, anybody getting Hana'ah from Tevel, or from Trumat Me'ah, where a Yisrael can't feed Trumat Me'ah to his animals, even though a Kohen can do such, because they're not allowed to get Hanat Kilui from Trumat Me'ah, or Hanat Kilui from Tevel. That's the first thing. The second thing he points out is that, in this instance, Mikom Makom Havi Vadai Tevel Midrabanan. The same question that Rashi asked, which is, that even if you do this Rabbi Hoshaya's ploy, you still have the problem that it is Tevel Midrabanan. And in our case, we're dealing with Bedika and Chametz, and Bedika is also a Dinderabonan. So, if you have Tevel Vadai Midrabanan, and then you have Chametz Vadai Midrabanan, and here you see that you have a Safek that's able to eliminate that problem because the Yorshim are allowed to eat from it, even though there was a Vadai Tevel Midrabanan, why can't we say then that Safek Motzi Midei Vadai, with regards to the Vadai necessity to have Bedika done in this instance, which is only a Din Derabanan? So one way Tosafot answers is, Omeri, the Matitin Ari Bishlo Bitlo. It's a case where you didn't do Bitlo. You didn't do Bitol, which would have eliminated the problem Midoraita and lowered it to a status of Bedika Midrabanan, that you didn't do. So in this case, the Bedika, or the necessity to eliminate the Chametz over here, is still at a Torah level, and therefore it's different than our case, which is only Tevel Midrabanan. Here we're dealing with Bedika, or elimination of Chametz, that is a Doraita, a Torah level prohibition. Or the Reis suggests over here that the Braita, as the Gemara, as it says over here, from Rabbi Hoshaya, is that it's a case where he's bringing in order for his animal to eat. And this is tevel, or feed, that are only ra'ui for an animal. It's not for human consumption. And therefore, the tevel midrabanan is not relevant over here, because a behemah is always considered to be achilat arai, and the animal can eat from it without any problem. And so that's why we're not speaking about tevel midrabanan, or not worried about tevel midrabanan over here, because the grains are uniquely associated with animals, and not with human consumption, and so therefore the Tevel Midrabanan doesn't come up. And even if you're only speaking about Bedika Midrabanan, it's different than our case over here, where there is no Tevel Midrabanan, because only talking about animals, and animals are not affected by that din of Tevel Midrabanan. In other places, the Tosafot quotes a Rabbeinu Ephraim, who says that elimination of the Chiyuv Tevel over here, or the necessity to take off Trumot to Masrot, is complete. And that means that when you bring it in the way that Rabbi Shaya says, and there was no Riyat Pnei Abayit, then not only is there no Tevel Midoraita, there's also no Tevel Midrabanan. It works. It works totally and completely, and eliminates the din d'oraita of Tevel, a requirement for Trumat Masorot to be removed, as well as Tevel Midrabanan. The reason the Bright over here says that it's Kadei Shebehem Tochelet, that's what the guy says he's bringing it in for his animal to eat, so that doesn't look bad. But the truth is that he plans on eating it as well, and it would work in order to eliminate the din of Tevel Midrabanan, even for human consumption. And even though there is a din of an Isra Achilat Keba for people before Riyat Pnei Abayit, any time during the processing of the items, that person can't have an Achilat Keva, there is a Din D'Rabbanan. Where does that Din D'Rabbanan go? Or where does that Tevel Midrabanan disappear? So Tosafot suggests in Menachot, on Daf Samach Zayin Amud Bet, that that is only true where there's a possibility that it could come to a Chiyuv Tevel D'Oraita. But once you've eliminated the possibility of it coming to a Din Tevel D'Oraita, there's no longer a Din of Tevel Midrabanan. And that's why, once you bring it in without Riyat Pnei Abayit, you eliminate not only the Din D'Oraita of Tevel, you also eliminate the Din D'Rabbanan of Tevel. The Sfat Emet has a slightly innovative way to deal with this issue, which is to say that the whole perspective of here is from the Yorshim. His individual passed away and left these over to his Yorshim. These Yorshim, even if you make them Chayav to eliminate or to remove Trumot Masrot, they would not have to give it to the Levi or the Kohen because it's a fake. And Amotzi Michavero Alav Araya, so they'll have to be Mafrish to Trumot Masrot to eliminate the Shem Tevel, but they would not have to give it to the Kohen and Levi because the Kohen and Levi can't prove that they're deserving of those items or they're really entitled to them because there really is a Safek over here. And the reason the Chachamim instituted this Tevel Midrabanan is to prevent people from stealing from the Kohen and Levi by doing tricks or items that eliminate the necessity for Trumot Masrot, and then they're going to be end up stealing from the Levi and the Kohen. So that's why there's Tevel Midrabanan, to prevent people from acting in that manner. In this instance, where the Yorshim, irrespective of what they do here, whether we say it's a Safek to Chomer or a Safek to Kula, even if we force them to take off Trumot Masrot, it's not going to end up with the Kohen and Levi. There's no necessity for then to have a Tevel D'Rabbanan to force them to give it to the Kohen and Levi because they're not going to give it to the Kohen and Levi either way or irrespective because it is a Safek in this case. And therefore the Tevel D'Rabbanan falls away for the Yorshim. Not for the Chaver, for the owner himself, but for the Yorshim it falls away because it's no longer relevant to be Gozer Tevel D'Rabbanan when they're not going to give it to the Levi and the Kohen, irrespective of the halachic outcome in this case. Now the Gemara continues again, Vein Safek Motzi Midei Vadai, is that principle of Rava really true, that a Safek can eliminate a Vadai? Vatanya, we have another Braita. Amar Rav Yehuda, Maseh B'Shifchato Shomitzik Echad B'Rimon. There was an incident where a Shifcha, a maidservant of a Mitzik, a ruffian in Rimon. There is another Girsa in some of the Gemaras that it's shown Masok or Mitzik, which is someone who processes olives, Berimon. Shetila Nefa Labor, that she threw or disposed of a miscarriage into cistern or into some sort of ditch. Tosafot over here says, don't say from here or prove from here that a Shifcha Knanit has Tumat Leda, because who says that she was throwing away her own miscarriage? It's a possibility that she was throwing away or disposing of the miscarriage of her master, not of her own miscarriage. Nevertheless, Tosafot says that from other places in Shas, we can prove the fact that a Shifcha Knanit does have Tumat Leda, just not from our situation over here. Then Uba Kohen, and then a Kohen came, Veitzitzbo, and he went to check on this Nefel, this miscarriage, to see whether the woman was chayevet to bring a korban for a zachar, or to bring for a korban for a nekeva, because tumat zachar and tumat nekeva with regards to birth are different. It is a difference as to whether you need 7 days of tumat and then 32 days of tara for a zachar, or 14 days of tumat and 66 days of tara for a female. So he went to know, Leidaim Zacharu Minekevai, whether it was a Zachar or Nekeva. Bama said if Nechachamim, and the Chachamim then investigated this issue about this Kohen, what's the status of this Kohen? Because a Kohen, if he now was Mahil, when he leaned over, he was Mahil on this Nefel, which is considered to be a Niftar, because it's already reached the point of development that it is a Din and Tumah, like we saw before by the Madur of the Akum. and now he's mahil on it, he has a problem of tuma, b'tiaru. And they said that the kohen is fine, because in that area, or in these cisterns, there's often found weasels. Bardalus is translated either as a marten or as a genet, which is a feline type of animal. Mitsui and Sham, they are there, and we assume that they are going to eliminate whatever is there or eat that which is there. Ba'ocha, divide itila. Over here, she definitely had a miscarriage that was dumped into this cistern. B'safei garua. And we saveg lo garua aishaita. And we don't know whether the animal at the point when the kohen was looking over, whether the animal already dragged it away, taken it away, or it hadn't taken it away. Bekati safek, and over here you have a safek, and motsimi de vadai, and it eliminates the vadai that there is a entity that is tamei over here, and the safek that the animals took it away are enough to eliminate the problem of vadai tuma that exists over here. So first of all, Tosafot points out that this Kohen was a Kohen Shoter, a Kohen Amaretz, because a Kohen is not allowed to make himself Tameh. He says, even if you want to suggest that the miscarriage over here was from the Gvirta, from the woman of the household, not from the Shifcha, that the Shifcha was just disposing of her master's miscarriage, and the Kohen was a Karov, was a relative, nevertheless, a Kohen, even if he's a relative, is not allowed to be Mitameh himself for a relative, Elohim Kain, it's absolutely necessary, and in order to take care of the mate, but not over here to find out information about the mate. So Tosafot says clearly this Kohen was mistaken in his understanding or what he engaged in, and even though they were asking him to give them advice as to whether they were as a zachar nekeva, which means that they're going to him for halachic information, nevertheless, Tosafot says he was a kohen shoteh or kohen amaretz. Although from Rashi, he points out that it was kohen korov umibnei abayit haya. Rashi seems to be indicating that there was justification for him going and doing this and possibly becoming tamei, even though Tosafot says that he doesn't think that that is the case. Now Rashi over here points out that the hole into which the animal took this item has to be at least what's called a poteach tefach. It has to be at least a tefach of space in there, because when it has a tefach of space in there, it becomes an ohel. And that ohel can then keep the tuma internal and doesn't allow the tuma to expand or go out from inside the ohel. Because otherwise, the tuma, after dragged it into the hole, would then go upwards and affect the person even when it was in the hole that it dragged it into. So Rashi says that the hole must be a poteach tefach. Others point out in Rashi that even though the hole itself must have a poteach tefach, the entrance to the hole must be less than a poteach tefach, because otherwise the tuma in the ohel of the tunnel would then come back into the cistern, because there's an ohel carrying the tuma back to the cistern. And there's a poteach tefach, it would allow the tuma to be in the cistern and the kohen should be tamei, just being over or being mahil on the cistern. So they say that, according to Rashi, the hole itself has a poteach tefach to make it an ohel so that the tuma does not expand upwards, but it also does not have an entrance to it that is a poteach tefach so that the tuma stays in that hole or tunnel that the weasel or the marten or the genet goes into and does not come back into the cistern. Tosafot does not agree with this. It must be that Tosafot believes that when you have a tunnel that's a tefach wide, but then it reaches a point or an entrance that's not a tefach, that's as if it's not an ohel and it's not considered to be protected. And therefore the tuma would actually expand upwards. So now you have a problem, which is that even after the animal took it into a tunnel, the kohen could be standing on top of the tunnel, and if he's standing on top of the tunnel, he's being ma'il on the mate that the animal drew into the tunnel, because there's no ohel down there. And since there's no ohel, it doesn't stop the tuma from expanding upwards, and he could be standing on top of that tuma. So Tosafot suggests that that is because the kohen is standing in Reshut Rabim. The cistern or the ditch where they threw the nefel was in Reshut Yachid. The Kohen himself was standing in Reshut Rabim. So as far as the cistern is concerned, the Chachamim say that the animal took it away, and so there's no tuma with regards to that area in Reshut Yachid, because Safek tuma Reshut Yachid would have been tamei. Whereas now, where he's standing in Reshut Rabim, maybe the tunnel is under him, that's a Safek tuma Reshut Rabim, and over there he will be tahor. And that's how Tosafot solves the problem of taking it into the tunnel. Or Tosafot invokes the principle that he said before on Amud Aleph that we mentioned earlier, that this is not a regular type of Safek. The fact that the animal took it into his tunnel and then ate it is what he calls a Safek HaRagil. It is something that is very common. It is Karov LeVadai, and therefore it does not sit in the world of Safek. So therefore, even if the Kohen is standing in a Reshut Yachid, and it's a Safek Tumah Reshut Yachid, Tosafot said before that we do not say Safek Tumah B'Shut HaYachid Tameh when the Safek is really Karov the Vadai that it happened, which is the case about animals consuming Basar, that it's nearly a certainty that they consume that Basar, and therefore we will not worry about the Kohen being Mahil on this tunnel of the animal that took it in, because he all likely took it into his tunnel and then ate it, and therefore it's no longer extant, and we don't have to worry about the Kohen becoming Tameh. So where again here it says, Lotema Shitila Nefel the Boar. It's not that the Shifcha came here and dropped in a miscarriage to the boar. Nefel implies that it's already a item or something that has the status that would be Tameh. Ela Ema Shipila Kimin Nefel the Boar. It was something like or along the lines of a discharge that could have been a nefel, that could have been a miscarriage. Rabbi Safek v'Safek. And now we have a double Safek, which is number one, did they have a miscarriage that brings Tuma? Or do we have a miscarriage that did not bring Tuma? Was it something that was far enough along a discharge that would cause Tuma? Or is it a discharge that did not create Tuma? Where it says, wait, doesn't the bright to say, Valedaim Zachar Huim or Nikevahi Tani? Doesn't it say that he was joined to determine whether it was a Zachar Nikevah? Which presumes that it's already a nefel that is a miscarriage that would create tuma. So Gemara says, Achikamar, Leidaim Ruachei Pila Im Nefeli Pila. He went to check at first whether it was a discharge or it was a miscarriage. V'imtim Zalor Nefeli Pila. And if it was a miscarriage that creates tuma, Leidaim Zacharu Im Nekevai. Then at that point he was trying to determine whether it was a Zachar or Nekeva. So therefore you have now a Safek as to whether the tuma is there. And because it was possibly a discharge and not a miscarriage. And you have a safek that the animal took it away. It's a safek safek. And a safek be motzimi de safek. Or the ibaitema, that again it's vadai, hatam vadai vadayu. Over there it's a vadai in both cases. Vadai that there was a nefel there that was a miscarriage there. But it was also a vadai that it was taken away. Kevan duchuda or baldulus mitzuyim sham. Since it's very common for there to be weasels, martens, genets in that location, Vadai garu vahai shata. They definitely took it away immediately. Now, nehi dishiure mishaira migrar mihat vadai garu vahai shata. Going back to what we saw earlier that the animals, yes, they eat these things or take these things away, but over there we suggested that there's a possibility that they left it over and that they didn't consume it completely. So Rabbi Zeira had said before, well, by basar they eat it completely. Rova didn't necessarily buy into that and said that maybe basar and chametz are not different in the way that the animals eat them or hide them. It's a difference as to whether it's a vadai or a safek. And ain't safek mutzimi de vadai. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is you don't have to worry about this being a stira with that concept, because it's possible that the animal did leave some of it over, but that doesn't eliminate the possibility that they definitely took it away from the current location. The animal definitely took it out of the ditch or the cistern. That's a vadai. That we can rely on. We know for sure they're not just going to leave it over there. They're going to take it back to their hole. They're going to take it to hide it somewhere. The fact that they completely consumed it, that's something else. That's something necessarily that we believe definitely happened. And therefore, you can differentiate between the conclusion we had before, which is we're not certain that it eats it completely. There could be leftovers with what we're saying here, that the vadai is not in the ditch, because that it doesn't mean that they consumed it. It just means they eliminated it from that location. That's a vadai that they moved it. It's not necessarily a vadai that they consumed it completely and didn't hide it or store it for later usage. And even though in the Mishnah we said that we don't worry about the chulda taking items from one location to another location, nevertheless, over here, when you go to the cistern or the ditch where the item was dropped, and you see that it's not there anymore, the Rabbeinu David points out that in that case we know for certain it was moved. And all we're doing is saying that the assumption is it wasn't moved just now, it was moved already at the time that the Kohen came. So when we already see that it's been moved, then we can extrapolate and say it was moved immediately and didn't get moved at a later time. But with regards to the chametz, where we never saw it being moved, or we never saw it being eliminated from one location and moved to another location, over there we're not going to be choshesh that it carried it from one location to another location. So even though it's vadai garu, that's only, again, a case where we know for certain it moved. But if we don't know it moved, we're not going to be choshesh for the fact that it was moved, and that's why in the Mishnah, we don't worry about the chulda carrying the chametz from one location to another location. So now the Gemara goes back to our Mishnah and discusses that the Mishnah says, do we really not worry about the fact that a weasel carries the chametz from one location to another location? Vaktani Seifa. The upcoming Mishnah says, after a person does bedika, whatever he has left over, yanichenu betzina. You have to put it away in a place that is secure. Shelo yetzarich bedicha acharav. Because if you don't put it in a secure location, you're going to have to go then do another bedika. Meaning that we are choshesh that animals are going to come and move it or take it from one location to another location. Tosafot already here points out that the Gemara here is not asking that we should be worried about it going from bayit to bayit and chatzer to chatzer, ear to ear, because that the Mishnah already says, ein ledavar sof. So that's not the question of the Gemara. The Gemara's question over here is from one location within a house to another location within the house. In that same house, how can you say that we're not choshesh, that a chuda is going to move the item from one location to another location, when we have in the upcoming Mishnah that if you do not secure the chametz, that we do worry about it disappearing, we do worry about your necessity then to do another bdika. So Rabbi Lokasho, Rabbi says, that's not a problem. How about Barsar? How about Shloshasar? It depends on which day you're speaking about. Are you speaking about the 14th, after everybody's done bdika, after all the chametz has been eliminated? Or you're talking about Shloshasar on the 13th, while there's still plenty of chametz that is around. B'Shloshasar, the Shchiach Rifta B'Kulubate, on the 13th, when everybody has plenty of bread and there's plenty of chametz around, Lo Mitzna. Then the chuda doesn't hide, doesn't store the chametz for future use, because he sees plenty available to him. And since he sees plenty available to him, he doesn't think that there's a necessity to hide it or to store it for future use. And therefore, we don't worry about the chuda taking it from one location to another location. Babasar, on the 14th, now that everybody's done bedika and is eliminating the chametz from their house, that chametz that's left over is a limited supply. And since there's a limited supply of chametz, the chuda over here says, matzna. He stores it. He says, there must be something going on. There must be something different. I need to store it because there's no longer any bread that is around. Now, Tosafot points out that this is not a definitive statement. When we say on the 13th, it doesn't leave over, it is pa'am she'ena mishayir. There are times where it doesn't leave over. And therefore, when we don't see it taking the chametz physically in front of us, then we're not going to worry about it because there's a possibility that it didn't leave it over. But in a case where we did see the animal take it in front of us, then we do worry about it because sometimes it does leave it over. So the statement that on the 13th it doesn't leave over is only a statement that sometimes it doesn't leave it over, sometimes it does. So in a case we don't know and we don't see it, we're just going to assume that it didn't leave it over. But in a case we did see the chametz and there's a possibility it was left over, then we're going to worry about it, and therefore we can reconcile Abaye with that statement of Rabbi Zeir before. And with regards to the 14th, Rabbi believes that it's always left over. Even if we don't see it taking the chametz, we assume that it was left over. But we'll still differentiate between chametz and basar, because by basar, even if we see him take it, we don't worry about it leaving it over because la'olam lo mashayeret. It never leaves it over. And in that way, Tosafot can then reconcile Abaye's position over here with Rabbi Zeir before, who differentiates between basar and chametz, meaning that Abaye's statements over here are 13th. It sometimes doesn't leave it over. On the 14th, it definitely leaves it over. And even on the 14th, where it does leave it over, that's only true by chametz. That is not true by basar. So just like on the previous Amud, where Rava criticized Rabbi Zeira's solution, so too over here, Rava criticizes this solution of Abaye, and has a play on words where he says, Amar Rava, v'chi chuda neviyahi, is chuda a neviyah. Now in truth, chuda is a neviyah. She was a prophetess, but what he's saying here is not chuda the neviyah, but chuda the weasel. Is the weasel a prophet? How can it be that the weasel knows that there's a change in the status of what's going on? He doesn't know the calendar change from the 13th to the 14th. He doesn't know that today there's a lot of chametz, tomorrow there's not a lot of chametz. He just comes out and finds whatever food he finds. He doesn't know what's going on in the environment around him. So how can you make a claim that he's on the 13th, he might not leave it over? And the 14th, he definitely is going to leave it over because he sees a scarcity of chametz. The yadana da'idna bayasar, that he knows today that's the 14th. Lo afi adorta, and nobody's going to bake anything until nightfall. Umishayro, and therefore he's going to leave it over, umitamro, and hide it in order to have leftovers for the future. You're giving way too much credit to the chuda. Ela Amar Rava, Rava makes the suggestion that mashi mishayer yinichenu bitzina. Why is it that whatever you have left over from your bedika on the night of the 14th, you should make sure to secure it and put it away? Shema tiltol chuda bifaneinu. The problem is not that we worry that a chuda might come and take it. because that wouldn't create a problem, as we already said before. If you don't see it, we don't worry about a chuda taking an item from one location to another. Problem is, if we see the chuda explicitly, you see the chuda walking off with the chametz, then you're going to need to follow up with the bedika, and that would then cause you the problem that we already were mitayek out of our Mishnah, which is, that's only true when you don't see it happen. But when you see it happen, and now you know vaday chametz went back into a location that's baduk, you need now to follow up and do another bedika. And Tanya Kavate de Rava, we have a bright that it supports Rava's contention. I would say, lechol chametz achar bedika. Someone who wants to eat chametz after the bdika, after the night of the 14th, you leave over chametz that you're going to utilize that night or the next morning. Ketzed yaseh? How should you do this? Mashim yisheir yenechenu b'tzina. You should make sure whatever you leave over is completely secure. Shlo tavo chuda b'titol b'faneinu. In order that you won't have a chuda that comes and takes it in front of you, v'yitzarich b'dika charav, and then you have to do a full-fledged bdika to go find this chametz, as we already indicated on the previous amud. And as Rava said there, that's a vadai that the safek is not going to eliminate, and therefore you're going to have to go chase after that chametz. V'mami amar, gzera shem yaniach eser v'yimtza teisha. The problem has nothing to do with the chuda, whether it's, according to Abaye, that the chuda might, unbeknownst to us, walk off with the chametz, or according to Rava, that the chuda in front of us will walk over with the chametz. It has to do with the problem that maybe you'll put down 10, and then you only find 9 afterwards. Because if you put down 10 and only find 9 afterwards, 1 is missing. That 1 that is missing, now we're going to be choshesh that it was now in the house somewhere or taken somewhere in the house. And as Rashi says, how come vada ikal mechash? Here you have to be choshesh ta mucha milta shnat la prusa achat. Now if for sure you know that one of the prusot is missing, and that's then going to force you to deal with it. So put it in a makom tzina, so that if you put down 10, you're going to find 10 afterwards. So you don't have to go now chase after the one that is missing. Because you put down 10 and find 9, there's definitely a problem that chametz now moved from this location, is found somewhere else in the house. And then you have to do a full bedika again, and that's not worth it. Therefore, secure your chametz. This actually has nafkamino with regards to our minhag, with regards to bedika, which is that, in general, today we end up cleaning our houses before we do bedika. In order for it to, quote-unquote, not be a brocha levatala, which it isn't anyway, because the whole point of bdika is to search. You don't have to find chametz. There became a minog or a practice to lay out 10 pieces of bread in order to do the bdika and actually find the chametz. Or even hiding it by one of the members of the family, then forces the others to look more carefully, and then they'll find other things when they're doing the bdika. The problem comes up when a person puts out 10 pieces of challah or 10 pieces of chametz, and then they only find 9 of those 10. That's exactly this scenario over here, and that causes huge problems. So a person should always be careful when they put out those 10 to note the locations, whoever puts them out, to write down those locations, because if you don't find all 10 pieces, then you have a serious problem that we know for sure there's a piece of chametz floating around, and that can cause problems that you'll have to do a full-fledged bedika in order to find it, because until you find it, we are choshesh that the chametz is somewhere in the house. All right, next case. Teisha tziburin shel matzah. You have 10 piles of matzo, v'chad shel chametz, and 1 pile of chametz. V'atach bar, and then a mouse comes, v'shakal, and took something from these piles. V'lo yadinan, and we have no idea, I matzah shakal, did he walk off with a piece of matzo? I chametz shakal, or did he walk off with a piece of matzah? Hainu, this scenario is similar to teisha chaniot, similar to the case of 9 stores, which the Gemara will bring a Mishnah in a second to explain. Perash, if there was a piece that moved away from the piles, and it was just laying there, v'atach bar b'shakal, and then a mouse came and carried it off, hainu seifa. That's the latter half of that Mishnah with regards to teisha chaniot, which we're going to bring in 1 second. Rashi over here says that the question at hand is, do you need to go and do another bedika? The achbar, this mouse, took whatever it was from these piles, and then walked into a house that was already baduk, was already checked. And Rashi says, came into chazinan. Since we see him walking in explicitly with an item, tzrichim anu livdok, you have to go do now another bedika. Tosafot does not like that explanation of Rashi, as it goes back to Rashi and Tosafot at the beginning of the Masechta as to what the purpose of bedika is. But Tosfot says over here, Batika is only a din derabanan. And the case of Teisha Chaniot, which we're about to bring, is a din doraita because it deals with nevela, non-kosher meat. And so how could you bring a proof from something that's a din doraita to something that's a din derabanan? So if that's the case, you can't be speaking about a din of Batika over here. So Tosfot gives one possibility, which is, there's a case where you didn't do bitul. The only time Bidika is midorabanan is once you've done bitul that takes care of your obligation midoraito. But if you haven't taken care of your obligation midoraito with bitul, then the Bidika or the necessity here is dealing with an issue that is an issue doraito. So that's one possibility of how to deal with it. Tosfot says that even with that answer, the two cases, this case of the chametz and the case of the teisha chaniot, are not really comparable because our case has a cheskat baduk. The house has a chazaka baduk that offsets whatever is being taken into the house. Whereas by the case of Teisha Chaniot, there's no offsetting chazaka. So how could you bring a proof from a case that is not similar to our case? Our case is better by chametz than the case of Teisha Chaniot. That then pushes Tosfot to bring from the Ri that the question here is not about doing bedika, not about finding the chametz. The question is that once the mouse took this into the house, and then you find this item in the house, are you allowed to eat that item? Is that item considered to be chametz? Or is that item considered to be matzah? In that case, the cheskat baduk is not relevant anymore, because it came from the outside. We know the mouse brought it from the outside, he brought it from those piles, and given that, it's from the outside, and the cheskat baduk has no relevance to the fact whether you can eat it or you can't eat it. That's very similar to the case of Teisha Chaniot, where the question at hand is whether you can eat the meat or can't eat the meat, and that's how he parallels the cases over here. The Ran over here actually takes a combination of Rashi and Tosafot. He doesn't love Tosafot's explanation for the Gemara, but he says that the question at hand over here, like Tosafot suggests, is about the item itself. What's the status of the item itself? But once we've determined what the status of the item itself is, that will have implications for the house. Because if you believe that the item that was taken is a sur, then the house now has an item that's a sur in it, and then will require a bedika because it's undermined cheskat baduk. And so he says, like Tosafot, that the question, like the Ri suggests, is about the item itself, but like Rashi suggests that the ramifications of what that item is has implications as to whether you need to do bedika in the house or don't need to do bedika in the house. So now the Gemara brings that Mishnah about Teisha Chaniot. It's not. Teisha Chaniot, you have 9 stores in the town. Kulan mochrim basar shkuta, and all of them sell kosher meat. Vachat, and there's a 10th store, mochra basar nevela, that sells non-kosher meat. Lakach me'achat me'em, and you purchased meat from one of the stores. Ben yudeh me'zeh lakach. And you don't know from which one of the stores you bought. Sveiko asur. In that case, the suffix is asur. Whereas venimtza, if you find a piece of meat on the street, haleich achara rov. You go after the majority. As Rashi explains over here, this is based on a principle that hold the kavua. Anything that is fixed in place that doesn't move, then we don't go after the rov, but it has a determination like mechsa mechsa, and he brings the psukim that are used to come to that conclusion. Rashi, based on that, the Mishnah makes a distinction between whether you bought from the stores or you went into the fixed location. You went into one of the stores, but since the stores are all fixed in location, we assume that it's a 50-50 shot. You went into a kosher store, you didn't go into a kosher store, and therefore it remains asur, the piece of meat that you have. Then if you find a piece of meat out on the street, we have the principle called the porish. Anything that leaves a statistical sample, Miruba Parish, came from the rove or from the majority. And therefore, if you find a piece of meat on the street, it's going to be considered to be kosher because the majority of stores that it could have come from are kshirim, and therefore the meat is considered to be kasher. So too over here by the case of chametz. In the case where you see the mouse walking off with the item from the piles, that's like as if you went into the store and bought it. And therefore it's a 50-50 shot as a chametz or matzah. Even though there are 9 piles of matzah and 1 pile of chametz, nevertheless, since it came from a kavua place, then taking it from there makes it as if it's a 50-50 and the item remains asur. According to Rashi, you require bedika. According to the Ri, you can't eat it. According to the Ran, since you can't eat it, it's asur. Therefore, you require bedika. Whereas in the case where the item was taken by the mouse from away from the piles, there was a piece lying away from the piles, and we weren't sure if that piece was chametz or matzah, and then you see the mouse walk off with it and go into the house, that's called the parish miruba parish. He didn't take it from the piles. He took it from the location that was away, like the piece of meat that you find on the street, which is called the parish, Mirupa Kaparish. Tosafot just clarifies that and says that even if the mouse took it from the piles, but you only see the mouse carrying the item away from the piles, That's the equivalent of it being left on the street or called parish, miruba called parish. As to what the logic is in this case is hard to really explain. There are those who want to suggest it has to do with the statistical sample. In order for something to have probabilities based on the statistical sample, the statistical sample has to be mixed properly. You have to have a complete mixture and not have identified items or separate items in order for it to be that when you say that this item came from the majority is only when all the items are mixed together well. But if they are separate items, then it's hard to say that kol deparish miruba kaparish because the statistical sample is not mixed and therefore each one or each item stands independently. The truth is that that's really a semantic difference because in reality, the probability, if you go and buy something from one store and you don't know which store it was bought, or you find something on the street, the probabilities are the same as to whether it came from the 9 kosher stores or from the 1 non-kosher store. Of course, unless there are other biases as to why you would have walked into one store or another store. Nevertheless, the probabilities should be the same. And therefore, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, the Kobet Shurim, and other places seems to indicate that this is a gzeirat ha-katuv. This is something based on the psukim and not necessarily a logical argument as to why something that's kavua is considered to be mechza mechza, whereas something that is parush, something that is separate, is considered to become from the rov. So another case, shnei tziburim, achat shel matzah, v'achat shel chametz. You have two piles that are left out. One is matzah, one is chametz. V'fneihem shnei batim. And over here we have two houses in front of you, echad baduk, v'echad sheino baduk. One of them already had the bedikah done, so it has a chazaka that there's no chametz there, and another one that's not baduk, so it doesn't have that chazaka. V'ata shnei achbarim. And two mice come along, achad shakal matzah, one of them took from the pile of matzah, achad shakal chametz, and one of them took from the pile of the chametz. Below danin, hai lahai ayil, v'hai lahai ayil. The mouse, one of them went into one house, one of them went into the other house. We're just not sure which mouse was the one with the chametz that went into this house, or is it the one with the chametz that went into the other house? Hainu shtei kupot. This is similar to the case of two baskets that's in front of us. The Tanan, it really probably should be Titania. We have a Tosefta in Trumot, that Shtei Kupot. If you have two baskets, Achat Shel Chulin, one has Chulin in it, V'Achat Shel Chuman, the other one has Chuman in it. V'Nehem Shnei Sa'im. And in front of them are two large containers, Achat Shel Chulin, one that contains Chulin, V'Achat Shel Chuman. Naflu Elu Leilu. And the smaller baskets fell into the bigger containers. But we don't know which one went into which. Mutarin. We say that they are mutar, meaning that the chulin remains chulin, and the truma remains truma, because we say ani omer, I say chulin l'toch chulin naflu, I assume that the chulin went into the chulin, ve truma l'toch truma nafla, and we assume that the basket of truma fell into the truma. So we make this assumption that based on the safek, we're going to assume that the best scenario played out, which was that the basket of chulin fell into the larger container of chulin, and the basket of truma fell into the larger container of truma. So Gemara says, how can you compare the cases? Ima d'ramrin and shani omer, I only make that assumption b'truma d'rabanan. When we're dealing with something that's truma d'rabanan, Rashi says b'zman hazeh, truma b'zman hazeh is d'rabanan. There are other possibilities of truma d'rabanan. When you're dealing with vegetables, that's only truma d'rabanan. Or you're dealing with peirot, according to many Rishonim, are truma d'rabanan. Those are other ways to come to truma d'rabanan. Maybe even in those cases, it would not be mekil because that's in a world of truma d'oraita. But Rashi brings the example, b'zman hazeh, we have truma d'rabanan. How can you then speak about b'chametz d'oraita? Chametz, which is a restriction that's midoraita, how can you make a presumption that the achbar with the chametz went into the non-checked house, and the achbar with the matzah went into the checked house? Mi amrinan, who says that the two cases are parallel? Mar says, atu b'tikat chametz doraita, since when is b'tikat chametz midna Torah? Dirabonani, it's only a rabbinic institution. Dimidoraita b'bitul b'alma sagilei, because if you did bitul, that takes care of your obligation midoraita. Then the bedikah is only a rabbinic institution. Once you're dealing with the rabbinic institution, then you're in the same ballpark or the same field as the shtei kupot. And just like the shtei kupot, by dinei d'rabanan, we make an assumption that the best scenario played out, because it's a safek d'rabanan, we're going to go to kula. So too, by bedikah, we're going to say the same thing, that we have a safek d'rabanan, we're going to assume the best scenario played out, and the mouse with the chametz went into the non-checked house, and the mouse with the matzah went into the checked house. Obviously, this is in a case where there's not a majority of chulin that can be mevatel the truma, because even though midorabanan we require 100 to 1, but midoraita min a Torah, if it's majority chulin, it would make it into a case of bitul, and therefore you wouldn't be dealing with a truma problem midoraita. If that's the case, the Tosafot Reed points out that it could even be speaking about truma doraita, because we're now at a rabbinic level problem, because it was bitul midoraita, just not bitul midorabanan. Obviously, according to the Bali Tosafot on the bottom of the previous Amud, who says that this sugya is according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that this is even true when you don't have a majority of chulin versus the truma, then Rashi's answer is necessary, which is that it has to be talking about or speaking about truma bizmanazeh, which is truma derabanan. And even though many Rishonim believe that even in cases of safek, there is a requirement of bedika, which is that the Raivud suggests in the previous case, the reason that you require a bedika, even though it's only a safek and it's a safek derabanan, is because the whole institution of bedika was made ala safek. The whole point of the bedika is that even though we're not certain there's chametz there, we want you to go and check for it and eliminate it. And the Ramban goes one step further than the Raivid and suggests that even in a case of sfeik sfeika, by bedika chametz, we're going to force you to do bedika, because the whole institution of bedika is ala safek. And therefore they made it like vadai chametz, and therefore the second safek or the sfeik sfeika has no impact over here, because you need to do bedika even in instances of safek. And that's how they explained why, by the case of the Teisha Tziburin, we're going to force you to do another bedika. That seems somewhat problematic in our case, because here you also have a safek. Nevertheless, we're determining that the safek goes the kula over here. So what you have to suggest is that there's a distinction between the cases. Before, there's a safek, and we have no way to eliminate that safek. Since we have no way to eliminate it, the institution of bedika is ala safek. Therefore, you require a bedika, even though there's only a safek in this case. By our case of the shtei kupot, or the two houses, over here we have a way to take away the safek from the house that was already checked. We have a way to then parlay off the problem onto the house that wasn't baduk. And since we have a way to solve the problem, to eliminate the safek, then we're not going to require a bedika, because that's not the type of safek that they instituted the bedika for, because here we can then say that the safek is solved by saying that we allocate the chametz to this house and the matzah to this house. But in a case where we don't have that opportunity and the safek exists in the item itself, and now we have uncertainty in the house, there we have to do a bedika, and that's why in the previous case of Teisha Tziburim we require a bedika, and in this case over here we do not require a bedika. Okay, we're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Yud Amud Aleph.